Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. That's right. This is Michael Dean After Dark. And it is After Dark, and I am Michael Dean. And if the hamster in your brain is spinning on the wheels and keeping you up and not going anywhere, call us and we won't tell you what to do. We will not give you advice, but people call in with problems. I think this is becoming like the libertarian Dear Abby for some reason. I think it's just because we're willing to do that. That's not really what the show's about, but people call in with interesting personal issues, and I don't really give advice. I give experience, strength, and hope, which I think is better than advice, because and if I don't really have any experience with what you're calling about, I'm not going to give any advice. So the call-in number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. And our co-host is Mr. Randy England. How are you doing tonight, Randy?
Good evening. I'm doing great. I'm down here in the Ozarks.
You're broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in the middle of America in Jefferson City, Missouri, right?
That's correct. And well, it's not windowless, but the window's closed.
Yeah. And you're an interesting cat, man. Your CV is something like you used to be a prosecutor. You used to be a bad guy, right, for the state?
Yeah, that's what I used to do. In fact, I was listening to a recording, an interview of me back when I was running for prosecutor in 2002. And I have a lot to atone for.
And now you're an attorney who helps people battle the position you used to be in, right?
I'm a criminal defense attorney. I wear the white hat, and in my line of work, being an attorney, it's easy to get into compromising positions, but at least being a criminal defense attorney, I have the luxury of only opposing the state in every case that I handle, and I do not do anything else.
You ever see that TV show Breaking Bad?
Yes.
What do you think of the attorney Saul Goodman in there?
Well, I had to love the guy.
He's funny. I like when they go to pick him. They're like, yeah, we don't need a criminal attorney. We need a criminal attorney.
And he was that.
Yeah.
I would aspire to be like Saul, but I don't have the guts.
Yeah. You know what I noticed after about four seasons of watching that show is his name is a joke. His name is, it's all good, man. It's all good, man. Like, it's all good, man.
I get it. Yeah.
Did you get that until now?
No, it's just now got it.
It's so obvious it's subtle. Like, I didn't get it until, you know, I was like slurring and telling somebody about the show or something.
You know, I feel really silly that I did not get that before right now.
It's all good, man. So you wanted to talk about what it's going to be like in LibPair or Libertarian Paradise. And I say that this show is different from all the other Liberty shows, because all the other Liberty shows, they're libertarians. They're people who want freedom. But most of what they talk about 24/7 is tyranny. Here's what the cops did today. Here's what Obama did today. Here's what somebody else did today. And that's important for some people to do that. But we have the luxury of being in a time where there's so much liberty media that we kind of don't need another tyranny show. So this show, Michael Dean After Dark, is the show that I believe would exist in LibPair, you know, when we just want to, when the government's out of the way and it's already drowned itself in the bathtub and all that's left to talk about is all the stuff we like, you know, fishing and family and cats and radio and stuff like that. So why don't you begin with some of your questions and we'll throw them against the wall.
Let me ask you one. I want to ask you one thing before I forget. And that is, what have you been on the air with the show now, 3 weeks? Is that how long it's been?
Well, I've been on radio The freedom.
I mean this particular show, Michael W. Dean After Dark.
I'm just saying, I'm no new pup to radio. I do another show, Freedom Fiends. It's on 22 stations and has been on radio for it'll be about a year next month. And we've been doing it as a streaming show for 3 years. This show, I believe this is the beginning of the fourth week. I can check on that. But this show's pretty new, and it's on one station, but it's also streaming on LRN. So there's a bunch of people listening around the world.
When I said you, I said that because this is like the first time that I've been on this show.
It is.
But I wasn't going to say we just yet.
We've chatted before, though. You and I've interviewed you a couple times. Yeah.
But the one thing that struck me, and I was hoping maybe to get some more of your feeling on it, that is, I've heard you say on the show, I actually have listened to it many times here since you just started a few weeks ago, and that the idea that you wanted to create new Liberty Media creators, is that the right word?
Yeah.
And I really think it's a brilliant thing to do. I mean, from your standpoint, I mean, maybe it's dangerous. And for a guy to do what you do, you're thinking, man, you got to have an ego to do this, right? But what kind of ego is there when you're trying to create more competition?
That's why you don't mean dangerous like, ugh. But you mean like dangerous to my job security, right?
Exactly. So,
I want to replace myself. That's my goal with everything I do. I mean,
I think that is neat. You know, because Michael W. Dean After Dark, it's a freedom incubator. You know,
there you go. I like that.
I'm going to call you the Startup Village of Liberty.
Yeah. Well, Startup Village of Liberty Media.
It's a little specious
to just say the first thing, but yeah. you know, I kind of got the idea from a few different things. One is my show, Freedom Fiends. I really wanted to expand it from 2 days a week to 7 days a week, and my co-host could not do it because he just had a kid and he's working 70 hours a week and he can barely make it for the two shows on the weekend. But he can make them, but he can't do anything more than that. He doesn't have time for any prep, which we're to the point where we don't really need any prep. You put a mic on me. I mean, I will be interviewed anywhere, anytime by anybody, pretty much. And, you know, and people call me and want me to be on their show, and they're like, when can we do it? When are you available? I'm like, name a time. All right, done. What's your Skype address? I'll do it. And so I wanted to expand that show to 7 days a week, but he couldn't do it. And instead of like what I would have done a few years ago, which is get mad at him and try to coerce him or, you know, bully him into doing it, not a few years ago, but 20 years ago, I just said, hey, man, I'm just going to start another show. And I didn't want to rely on one person. So I decided to open source it. And also Free Talk Live have been kind of doing that in a way, incubating. And they're a big show on 140 stations, and they, you know, have a lot of advertisers and they make a living at it. And they actually have an employee now that they hire to make calls and help them with that. So, but what happened was Ian is an activist and went to jail for a few months and could have been in a lot longer. And he does a lot of activism still. They can get him arrested for things that should not be crimes. And he realizes he could end up in jail for a really long time at some point. So he wants the show to be able to keep going without him. And he does have a co-host, Mark. But basically what Ian's doing is he now has three or four different co-hosts that come on as the third wheel kind of and are training, you know, sink or swim training. And a few of them didn't work out and they didn't have them after two or three shows. And a few of them are great and they're on almost every show, like Johnny Ray and the guy from the School Sucks podcast. Brett,
who's they all have to be from New Hampshire.
Yeah. Yep.
But not yours.
No.
Hey, I got one other question I was going to ask you. I looked on the website, and you have four shows a week that are original live shows, right?
Yeah.
And then it says, and I'm going to remember this, the fifth show is an auto-generated best-of show made from that week's four live shows. How do you auto-generate a best-of show?
It's actually not yet auto-generated. It's going to be auto-generated, but they're still setting that up. There's 72 shows on GCN, so things get done, but eventually. And you know, the main thing was they had to get the show on, And, you know, that takes a lot of like inserting ads, inserting bumps, me recording intros, outros, liners, right? I wrote all new music. Most of the music in this is new, newly composed for this. There's a little bit of my old band Bomb, but it's actually generated by the board ops, the guys who are running the board in Minnesota. I'm in Wyoming. You're in Missouri. And our one station is in Illinois, right on the border of Kentucky. And then there's people listening all over the world, live streaming through the LRN feed, and then also later on the internet. So, yeah, it's kind of a very diversified, diverse places, earthquakes in diverse places kind of podcast, kind of radio show. It's actually what it is it's... you know, with most best of shows like Rush's Week in Review or whatever, he makes millions of dollars a year and he has a staff and they can go through and pick out the really cherry moments. But my best of, the fifth one at the end of the week, is the first half hour of the Monday show, the second half hour of the Tuesday show, the third half hour of the Wednesday show, and the fourth half hour of the Thursday show. And you would say, well, that's not really a best of, but you know what? My media is all so good, and I'm not joking, I really believe this, that you can make a best of that way with my shows.
It works for me. It works for me.
And this is the first week of the show, so this part right here is going to be the first half hour of the best of show. So good, man. We're not even talking about what we plan to talk about today. But
an honor. I'll try to say something interesting.
I'll talk about my process for 6 hours straight, man. And you're talking about my process. We didn't even plan that. I'll talk.
Let me get you off of that then.
All right.
Well, one thing that I think about every once in a while is you know, you talk about LibPair, you know, and let's pretend that we're in it, or what would we do if we were in it and that. And, you know, it's interesting. You think about all the diversity of behavior, you know, that people have. And right now our problem is that there's lots of people that don't deal very well with the fact that we act our way and somebody else's family acts another way. And sometimes we don't like that stuff. And are we coming to a break?
Yeah, just wrap it up really quick to get us set up for the next break.
All right, well, I was just going to say, you know, I wonder what kind of towns there would be in the Libertarian.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. This is Michael Dean After Dark. If you want to call-in number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. I'm talking with Randy England. He is the co-host du jour. Randy, you wanted to talk about LibPair and what it would look like. What do you want to know?
Well, you know, and I do want to know, because I don't know what it would look like, but if everybody was, you know, free to live as they wanted to, there are many people that are concerned. They don't want to live, you know, in a place where, like, there's, you know, people shooting up drugs on the corner and things like that. So you would obviously have communities that are kind of tightly knit around certain standards of living. I mean, even now you have homeowners associations and that make sure everybody has their same color, their house is painted and things like that.
DJ and I lived in a place like that in California, and that's part of the reason we moved to Wyoming was because, you know, it took us 9 months and threatening legal action to get permission to put a motion sensitive light on the back, the dark end, back end of a house we owned after someone tried to break in. That's ridiculous.
I know, you know, and I have very little sympathy with it in that, but sometimes when you go to places like that and you realize that, you know, your neighbor is only, you know, 4 feet away on each side. I mean, I guess I understand why some people want to do that, even though it's probably not for me. I've never lived in a community like that. But anyway, there would be lots of them. And like, I'm Catholic, and I'm sure that there would be people, you know, other Catholics who would want to have a town that's just a Catholic town, you know, and everything in the town would fit with Catholic culture and morality and all this. I'm not saying I want to live in this particular town, but I know there's people who want to do that. There'd be people in Mormon towns, and there'd be weird, you know, I mean, there'd be, I don't know, hippie commune type things. There'd be all kinds of stuff. You know, I would be all over the place. What would be allowed, I guess you'd say. You know, people would do things and they would use contracts and to have covenants so that people would behave in certain ways if they were in your neighborhood. And, you know, I wonder how much we would see that sort of thing, or would most people just live in, you know, really diverse towns like they do now? I don't know. I mean,
well, let's see. One of the most diverse towns I've ever lived in is San Francisco, and it's kind of diverse by demand. Like, it's, you know, it'd be considered tacky and illegal to try to have a Catholic only even house there, probably. And that's the only place I've seen someone shooting up heroin or speed in broad daylight on a street corner, using a parking meter as a tourniquet, pushing their arm against it in broad daylight. Which was just jaw dropping to me, and I'm a recovering heroin addict, and I kind of felt like, come on, man, keep that out of the streets where it might frighten the horses. But I think a problem I have with homeowners' covenants, this was my big problem with it, is that they're actually it's kind of a living document, which I guess it has to be, but they tend to really change those things radically from when you buy the house. You know, you buy the house and then 10 years later, you're not living under the same rules you signed up on. I mean, to the point where, like, you know, they decide to outlaw basketball courts kind of thing, or like, have, you know, even like playing basketball in your yard on a sunny Sunday afternoon or something. And those changes are generally made like to not have that, to have a chance at not having that imposed on you as rapidly. You basically have to join the homeowners board, which becomes a whole lot of infighting and politics. I'm kind of a bigger fan of just everybody having their own property. And I also think that without the government, everyone would be about 7 or 8 times richer. I think that without the government, there are immense amounts of property that have been stolen by the government. I mean, especially in the Mountain West, like literally something like 52% of Wyoming is owned by the state, the federal government, and then like 10 or 20% of it's owned by the state government. I mean, there is, I don't want to say this because I don't want to invite a bunch of people to move to Wyoming, but there is literally enough room in Wyoming to house everybody that's homeless in America comfortably. And I don't want them to all move here. But, you know, I also think that in LibPair, without the government, without the coercion, without the cop on every corner, I think it would be less peaceful for a short period of time. I think a lot of people would be shot in self-defense trying to steal stuff because they don't want to work for a living when all the freebies stolen for them are cut off. And we'll be back with more. I'm Michael Dean After Dark with Randy England and our vision of LibPair. Stick around, kitty cats.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll show you the difference between leadership and authority, and how to eliminate the demand for authority while remaining peaceful and even calm. We have a forum, and it's got gardening tips. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
We
If the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Please call in and please say the whole thing. Michael W. Dean, please say the whole thing. We're talking on Michael Dean After Dark about LibPair, which is my word for libertarian paradise. The so far fictional, but not always. Maybe not at Porkfest. Maybe that's the real LibPair or a microcosm of it. I'm going to be there. And LibPair, it's something that we like to think about because you have to envision it and discuss it before you can get there. So we're going to go to the phones. We have a caller named Nathan from Texas calling about homeowners associations. And yeah, man, are you there, Nathan?
Yep, I'm here. How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm good. How'd you find the show?
Freedom Fiends listener.
Cool. Do you live under a homeowners association covenant?
No, I do not, but a homeowners association is similar to a lot of ideas that I see discussed about LibPair. Because a lot of times people will bring up these scenarios of, well, what if someone fences in your house on all sides? Or what if someone throws skunks at your house and yada yada?
Throws skunks at your house? That's funny, man.
I think Stephanie Murphy discussed that one. But the common thread I've seen a lot of times is people will say, oh, well, we'll just shun that person. And usually that kind of thing requires like something like a homeowner association, like some kind of covenant or agreement where people get together and say, like, we'll shun this person if they do X, Y, Z. And the problem with that is you can kind of, like you're saying, you can recreate tyranny if those are too good, if they're too effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for homeowners associations to covenants to work in a LibPair kind of way, they would have to be a little bit less like the government, and the political structure of administering them would have to be a little less like the government, because in my experience, it just looks like you're not really in the situation we were in. Instead of doing what it was supposed to do, which is creating a place that's nice where people don't blast music and vomit in the street in front of your house and, paint their house 42 different colors and freak you out and scare your dog. It basically ends up kind of like, okay, now I've got the UN over me and I've got the federal government and the state government and the local county government and the local government, and I'm voluntarily adding another government. That's kind of how they are. They tend, in my experience, to be tyrannical. And the experience I have with that is that someone tried to break into our house and they had taken advantage of the fact that there was no light on the back of the house. All the other houses in our area, they were all painted exactly the same, had lights in back of them. Ours did not. And we're willing to pay for a motion sensor light. I actually bought it. I still have it. I've never hooked it up. We live in Wyoming now, and it's in my basement in my toolbox. Motion sensor light kit. They would not let us do it, and we had to go back and forth with lawyer letters for 9 months threatening legal action if anything happened to us because we didn't have a light, until they actually went ahead and did it and paid for it. But by then, we were in the process of moving to Wyoming. So that is not a useful or proactive or happy covenant. And the covenant was like 20 pages long. It was from, 15 years before. We couldn't get an electronic copy of it. We had this old, faded, like, ninth generation Xerox copy that was hard to find anything in. So it was hard to even know what the rules were. And that's not how I think it would work in LibPair. But basically, a homeowner's covenant is basically saying, this is private property and we make the rules and we've agreed to live here because we make the rules. So it's kind of like a private property imaginary fence around a bunch of private property that people have agreed to have another fence around it. So that kind of makes sense. And I think that a lot of that, though, would involve a lot more people owning their own property. And I think because of the government, it's pretty hard for people to own their own property or make enough money to do it. There's all sorts of impediments in the way. What do you think, Nathan?
Well, the thing is that, like you say, the government creates these. I think what it does is kind of like, what's the word for that? When the government brings in foreign aid and that drives out the local businesses, it's like
price fixing
out or whatever.
Price fixing.
Yeah, it's because people kind of expect the state to handle these kinds of things. They don't really take an active issue in it or an active part. Like I was on the Facebook today, and there was I was on Facebook.
No, I said I'm sorry. I'm sorry you were. I heard you. I said I'm sorry you were on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I forgot you're off there. some guy posted the story about people want to boycott the Mozilla or the browser because the CEO is against gay marriage or something.
Oh, I saw that and somewhere
someone,
else. Yeah, yeah.
And it's someone posted a comment that I would download and use Mozilla Firefox even if it was produced by Satan himself.
Yeah, I mean, there's I've got enough people asking me to join. I've got enough beefs of my own to not join into someone else's boycott beef, especially something with software. I don't even think of software as having a CEO. You know, software is just a tool. I'm not going to throw out all of my wrenches made by a certain company if I find out that company did something, you know, some individual at that company did something I disagree with. That's just ridiculous, man. It's kind of like, you know, people try to get you to boycott bands. They try. If I only use software by people whose entire life view I agreed with, I'd probably only be using the software that my friend Derek makes.
Well, getting back to the issue of the state crowding out, do you think in LibPair people would put more mind into their purchasing decisions, like fair trade coffee and, you know, things like that?
Well, people say they would. I know fair trade coffee is kind of a weird deal too, because it doesn't actually help the people it's supposed to be helping. You're breathing real hard into your phone there or something. I'm getting a lot of static each time when there's silence here. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, sorry about that. I haven't used my phone to call in very much. I like to use Skype.
Okay. You can use Skype in the future. It's Kitty Feet 1, KittyFeet1, one, like the feet of a cat. And, you know, this is something Ian Freeman pointed out, and I put into a Talkers Magazine article that's coming out in the next couple days. It's a good tip is that on a cell phone, if you download Skype and use Skype on the phone, it'll sound better than using the phone on the phone.
Wow.
Yep. So I don't know. Randy and I have had discussions before about would it really work to just snub people when they're doing really bad things? It might be after a few generations when everyone who's not libertarian has just left a geographic area. Just, I can't take this, you know, I need to live in a socialist paradise. I'm moving to Somalia or something. It works in fiction. It works in Heinlein, you know, basically people who no one will trade with have to go work on the asteroid mines, which are the, you know, loudest, noisiest, and most dangerous jobs in the universe. So maybe, who knows?
Go
ahead.
I say, even now with prisons, Mark Edge likes to talk about how, you know, some prisons are worse than the other prisons. And you said, you know, that one post office was the worst of the post offices.
Yeah.
Where they send the really bad post office workers.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, I will entertain these thoughts all day long, but I'm not really the best person to ask for a definitive, how would this work without government? You know, which some people say is a cop-out. Like, well, if you can't tell me how it's going to work in something that's never been allowed, then I don't want you to be allowed. But, you know, I don't know, man.
Robert Murphy gave, I think, the best response to that. He was saying, well, if you could outline it perfectly, then that would defeat the whole purpose and the state could do it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It would be like explaining to Kim Jong-un exactly where the grocery stores and the shoe stores and you know, all the other stores would go.
It's asking.
All right, thanks a lot, Michael.
Thanks, man. Thanks a lot for your call, Nathan. Take care. Yeah, it's kind of those kind of questions are kind of like asking someone to centrally plan how things would work without central planning. You know what I mean, Randy?
Yep, it would be like that.
What's the Christian thing of? Did Christian theologians hundreds of years ago actually spend a lot of time debating how many angels could dance on the head of a pin? Is that a real thing or is that a joke?
You know, I think I heard someone who was an actual theologian say a while back that they never actually did that.
Yeah,
I didn't think so. No, but of course it's a metaphor for the things that they actually argued about. So,
yeah, for being the hamster on the wheel, trying to answer the questionnaire in detail, the essay questions of how LibPair would look and operate.
That's true. That's true. You know, you'd have, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier, I'm Catholic, and you know, down in Florida, there's a town down there that was started by the fellow who used to own Domino's Pizza. And his name is Monahan, and he start up a town that was going to be just like a Catholic town. And, you know, it built a nice big, like, cathedral in it and you know, a real nice place in that. And then would invite people to move in. And, you know, the idea being that you could be living with all these like-minded people. And, but I think he found out at some point that, no, you couldn't have a town, you know, that was actually set up, you know, to reflect, say, Catholic moral teaching, because
it's illegal.
It's illegal. and you know, whether you happen to like, you know, what those rules would be or not, in a free society, you would be able to do it. I mean, you would have covenants when you buy the land. You would agree to abide by them. I assume that people that move there would be happy to do that. I mean, that's why they would be going there. And in a society like that, I mean, you know, guests would, you know, if you had friends over, they'd be real hard pressed to find any, you know, recreational drugs.
You know, I wonder though. I wonder how much traveling across the border there would be for the other strip club in the next town over, because I lived in a dry town, which was, it was not specifically a religious town, but it was Chautauqua, New York, which is a summer community for the arts where my mother had a store for about 30 years. And it is literally a dry town. You cannot buy alcohol there, and it's illegal to possess there. And everybody drinks there anyway. They do what's called Chautauqua tea, which is you get a silver tea set and you sit out on your porch pouring tea, but it's really bourbon.
I have no doubt that you are right.
And, you know, Utah, you know, Mormons don't drink, but Utah has the highest per capita Valium prescription rate in the country. So maybe the alcohol is coming in solid form for some of them. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yes, kitty cats and dojis. Dojis! I hope you're doing well. I hope the hamster in your brain is calming from the sound of our voices. And we're discussing LibPair on Michael Dean After Dark, Libertarian Paradise. So, Randy, get some more thoughts. Go.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we were talking about, you'd have these groups, and some people would get up and hang around with just people just like them. And probably some of them would be, you know, religious-based groups. Like, you know, can you imagine a Mormon town that would have
live in a Mormon town. But
with plural marriage, and that would be completely legal. And
I have a comment on that. I think it's really hypocritical that people who are into gay rights are so often so anti-plural marriage. And they talk about it like it's, even when it's adults, they talk about it like it's caveman behavior. And it's really, it's just marriage choice, man. What's the difference between that and a man or a woman? So that's what I think, all you people in San Francisco.
if you want somebody to agree with you completely, go to someone who is fighting as hard as they can to stop gay marriage, and they'll tell you right up front, hey, this is going to lead to polyandry and line marriages.
Trees marrying dogs, yeah.
And actually, they're right. I mean, the point here is that a voluntary, consenting adults are, you don't need the government in there using their force on them. But one thing that I wonder about, you have this odd group. They're doing their own thing in there, but you know, it's voluntary. Everybody's in there voluntarily, and let's pretend for a minute that like the weird old dad isn't marrying 4-year-old girls, okay? I mean, because that's I don't know how that's going to fly, but you get a situation where you find out that some other group somewhere is actually doing the state thing and not voluntarily.
Hey, we're getting a call. Really. I'm going to put this call on. We got Abel calling in.
Let's do it.
Are you there, Abel? Hello. Abel, are you there?
Abel.
He missed it. All right. So, sorry, go back to what you're at.
Well, yeah, right. If I can go back and remember it. No, what if you found out that people were being, really physically abused in a nearby community that you had been leaving them alone? Do you do anything in this society? I mean, there's not going to be anybody over there that's going to be doing anything about it. Where do you draw the line?
I don't know the answer to that. And I think you brought something up similar one time we talked before, and you had some ideas and I had some ideas, but I don't know, man. I don't know how the correction of horribly abusive behavior would work in the absence of the government. I just, it might sound like blind faith to trust that it can, but I don't know, man. I don't have the answer for that one. I mean, I'm picturing something like a raiding party gets together with weapons and goes over and rescues the other people and brings them back, but
okay. But nobody in the raiding party has been forced to do it. Right.
Right.
And nobody has been forced to pay for the raiding party that doesn't want to pay to do it.
Right. Right.
Well, how about this? What if you say Bin Laden, takes down the World Trade Center and they know that Bin Laden did it. So somebody goes to Indiegogo and crowdsources the project kill Bin Laden.
Yeah, see, I don't see any difference between doing it with a private militia or posse than doing it with a government going after, let's go kill that bad guy. We know where he is. Other than the force of paying for it and the huge mission creep that happens around it, where you end up blowing up a wedding party of 40 people to kill one guy who might be a bad guy. That's not the same
thing. I don't
think
there you could have collateral damage. Would have to be somebody would have to pay
paid for collateral damage. Interestingly enough, it actually is in a lot of Middle Eastern country. They have a price list. Unfortunately, they say men are worth more than women. But all right, we'll talk about more about this when we come back in the second hour of Michael Dean After Dark with Randy
England. You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
They start experimentando.
I don't know
if I'm seeing
it. The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. fiendsfeedingme.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Michael Dean, After Dark, and no one can replace me. Randy's right. That did go out over the air, so I'm addressing it. If you're one in a million, there's eight of you in New York City. If you're one in a million, there's a half of you in Wyoming. And I'm in Wyoming, so there's only a half of me, but I guess I double my pleasure because there's two halves of me. There's one whole me. So, Randy, you had a story you want to tell. What is it?
Well, I was going to tell you about, I went out west to visit my brother a couple of weeks ago.
Where's out west?
Arizona.
Okay, Arizona. Out west, yeah.
I was hoping I'd get to meet America's sheriff, but Sheriff Joe was available.
That guy's horrible, man.
But when I got there, I found out that he was in a criminal jury trial. And, you know, I called, and he was in the thing, and he wouldn't be out, so I met him at his house when I got there, and he said, yeah, I got to go back tomorrow. We got a criminal jury trial going, I didn't, you know, queer the deal or anything that would get him in trouble. We didn't talk about the case we were doing it, but we talked about it plenty afterwards, and apparently, you know, they didn't ask him really all the right questions that would have gotten him tossed off the jury.
During voir dire. Yeah.
Well, maybe having a brother who was a prosecutor for 14 years and then a criminal defense attorney and a sister who's a judge and who used to be a cop and
I think the sister who's a judge would mean more than the brother who's an attorney, probably.
I don't know. But, well, anyway, that apparently didn't bother them in anything. But, you know, I mean, if the state had known that, I mean, this is a guy, he's the least one of our whole family who would have, like, had an affinity for police. I mean, this is the guy who got a radar detector for his second birthday. I mean, he does not like, well, second, I don't know, second, 16th, anyway.
There you go.
And somehow my brother got onto the jury, and he did me proud. I mean, as the story came out later, you know, that some cops said that somebody who touched her had assaulted her, and it was a felony. And anyway, they got into the jury room, and my brother, God bless him, he hung that jury.
Nice.
and got two other guys to go along with him. I agreed with the whole thing. And I went in and I watched the day's jury when I came to town. We couldn't go do the things we were going to go see. I was a tourist, but I came in. I thought, I'll go in and watch the jury trial. So I'm sitting there, and I sit there through the whole thing, and it gets near the end. And finally, both the prosecutor.
You there, Randy? Hello, hello, hello.
And the defense attorney want to know who the heck I am. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I do now.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think the NSA pressed the dump button for about 5 seconds, but keep going.
I just don't know why. Well, anyway, I'm sitting there. There's nobody in. This isn't a big case. I mean, it's a felony case, but nobody cares. There's just some little lady sitting in there that they want to put in prison. And they're trying to figure out who the heck I am because I'm the only person watching this case. And so finally the defense attorney comes over to me and goes, who are you, you know? And I said, I'm just observing. And he asked a little more, and I told him, well, I'm actually one of the jurors' brothers who had to be in jury duty instead of vacationing with me today. Oh, man, you'd have thought, you know, the alarms were going to go off and everything. And so he comes up to me a few minutes later and says, I'm going to have to report this to the judge, you know.
And that's before they asked if you what you did for a living.
Yes, that's right. Before they knew.
Weird.
And so the judge comes in and they don't want to get started. Say, bring in the jury. And he goes, no, don't bring in the jury yet. Your Honor, we have to report to you that this man sitting here in the courtroom is the juror's brother. And that, you know, the judge you know, asked me who I am, and I said, you know, told him who I was, and I was here, and why I was here. You know, I came here and found out my brother was in a jury trial, so I thought I'd come and watch. And he says, well, Mr. England, let me just explain the system to you. And he's going to start in, and he's going to tell me about the sacredness of the jury trial and all of this, and how we have these little conferences, and we hide all these things from the jury, and you can't be telling your brother what you've heard here today if you go home tonight. And I said, Judge, I said, I think I can cut this short. I said, I was a prosecuting attorney for 14 years. I said, I've spent 8 years as a criminal defense attorney, and I know I'm not supposed to talk to my brother about anything I hear, and he's not supposed to talk to me about anything about this case today. So, okay. And the judge goes, good enough for me. And we went on with it, but it was kind of fun. But like I said, after that, I found out that my brother cut straight to it and cut the lady loose. So I was proud of him. He'd never even heard of jury nullification, but he did it.
Yeah, he did it without calling it that and knowing it. He just, well, he voted his conscience, apparently, you know. I wouldn't even call that jury nullification. I'd say he didn't let them do something stupid, and you know, maybe they didn't have enough to do something stupid.
No, I think that there was doubt whether the lady did what they said she did, you know. But still, like I said, I have seen so many juries, you know, they're just knee jerk, you know, and if the cop says it, the cop says it. Now, when I was a prosecutor, I probably felt a little better about that, but I tell you, I got nullified a number of times when I was a prosecutor, where I'd have somebody come up to me. I'd have a case that was a slam dunk. There's no way on earth I could have lost it. And then I'd have a juror come up to me after the case, after they acquitted the guy, and walk up to me and say, you know, you seem like a nice fellow, but no offense or anything, but that defendant, we wouldn't saddle him with a felony. He seemed like a nice boy from a good family, and we just couldn't see doing that, and so we refused to do it. And I've heard that, you know, more than once. You know, it really does happen, even if you don't tell them about it. Unfortunately, New Hampshire is the only state in the union where you're allowed to tell the jury that they're allowed to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty cool thing.
But they pick it up anyway.
That's a pretty cool thing, too. You know, I'm amazed how procedural courts are about the rules of, you know, juror secrecy and the procedure. When the things that they have the people in the court for more than half the time are things that shouldn't be illegal, you know, like basically we want to follow the letter of the law and have a clean jury in sending this guy away for doing something that didn't hurt anybody, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why well, I don't know. I mean, there are rules, you know, rules of evidence and certain things, you know, like hearsay. I mean, why aren't you allowed to say, you know, say hearsay when you're in the courtroom? Well, when someone makes an accusation against you, you should be able to test that accusation. You should be able to come back and ask them questions, you know, and test what they've said to see if it really holds up. And if somebody comes in and says, well, so-and-so said that he did this, well, then it really isn't fair that you would get to put that in when, say, the defendant doesn't get to cross-examine that statement because the person who said it isn't there. And so, I mean, there's some logical things here. I mean, I think most of the rules of evidence would stay exactly the same even in a free society when you had a trial, because these things are not the results of legislatures and kings. These are the results of people that are trying to get at, you know, the truth and putting in reliable things. And there's just certain things that you know, get so far off. One of the things is efficiency. Obviously, if you start going off and off and off and go for third and fourth and fifth generation hearsay, you'll never, ever get a trial done. You couldn't possibly finish it. And this is the kind of nightmares. You see this in small claims court where you have two parties. I mean, attorneys get a bad rap, and so much of it is deserved. But if you see two parties that are pro se fighting one another in court, you do begin to appreciate the fact that baloney
That's why shows like Judge Judy are so popular, because they're basically small claims type things with two people acting pro se, and hilarity ensues.
Oh, really? It really is. But, you know, they pick those for maximum entertainment value. If you were really a small claims court judge, you know, you'd go in there every day wondering if it maybe just be better to just shoot yourself in the head.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, you're having these people in there just bickering at one another, and they're not the people that are there in real life are not nearly as well trained as the defendants on, you know, Judge Judy. I mean, those people are all told ahead of time and explained very carefully when they're supposed to shut up and where they can go and everything,
and when they're supposed to yell and when they're supposed to break a chair over someone's head.
Yeah, and in the real life, it's just a nut house. It really is. So, I mean, you know, it's just. It's hard to watch. And I'm not just saying that from an attorney standpoint. If you were there, you'd be saying, oh, would you get on with it, you know? Because when people have been wronged, they're often not as rational as they should be. And sometimes that's the reason why you ought to hire an attorney, so you can get somebody in there that's not all wrapped up in it emotionally.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who believe that since attorneys are technically, you know, what is it, not wards of the court, but what's the term?
Officers
of the court. That, you know, people who don't believe in the system don't want to get an attorney and end up in worse situation than if they didn't get an attorney. I kind of look at it as going into a foreign land and hiring an interpreter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You may not like the language, but it's better than not knowing what they're saying.
Yeah. I think in the next section we should talk a little bit about – I guess we're going to go back to how things would work in LibPair, because you have some ideas of how courts might work in LibPair, right?
Maybe I do. let's see where we go with it.
Yeah. Yep. So how long have you been a practicing attorney? And how long were you a prosecutor for the evil empire before that?
Well, I've been a loyal member of the bar since 1990.
Wow.
Yeah. And this year they this kills me. I mean, they raised our bar rates just astronomically, you know, this year. I mean, it went up like 33% in 1 year. And of course, you can't complain to anybody because, like, who wants to listen to a lawyer griping about his bar dues, you know, going up or something. So all I could do is write it. I wrote a protest letter to the Supreme Court, and I wrote one to the bar and everything. And
you mean the state Supreme Court, right?
The state Supreme Court, yeah, yeah. And the Missouri bar. And I got a nice polite letter back from both of them saying, we've considered your protest and have denied them.
Well, that's how it is with monopolies. You know, I mean, they have a monopoly on allowing people to practice. So, you know, you write your state, you write your representatives, and they do the same thing. They're like, yeah, we've considered this carefully, and we're going to do the opposite, which is what we're going to do anyway. But thank you for your input, and it's a form letter. We'll be back. I'm Michael Dean After Dark after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, the invigorating alternative to those other late-night shows.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Kitty cats, doges, doge. It's Michael Dean. It's After Dark. Talking here with my buddy Randy England. We're talking about, without the government, who would build the courts? Although I think we've canned that one for now, and Randy has another thought. What do you want to talk about, Randy?
Oh, we might have. I was wondering what, talking about how things would be if we had a free society. Do you think there would be unions?
Yes.
And what role do you think they would play? Or how would it be different, I guess?
I think it'd be more like guilds in the Middle Ages. I think that unions, like many things in the world, are a good thing when they start and then end up being more corrupt than the things that they started to fight.
What about the guilds do you think would be attractive?
I think they would do a lot more than just protecting. I think a lot of what unions do now is just bullying, price fixing, and make unsustainable economies that lead to things like Detroit, where you have massive unemployment, massive flight from the area, and a lot of broken windows and a lot of violent crime.
Well, you know, a lot of people, I mean, obviously it would be, if you wanted to form a union voluntarily, no one should be able to stop you. But I've heard plenty of people say that unions can't possibly change the analysis. The thing you just said, if a union got in and was able to get benefits that are too good, they could end up destroying themselves by having a competitor come in that has more realistic benefits, wages,
yeah,
whatever.
I think collective bargaining would be out the window. And that's mainly what unions do now. When unions started, a lot of what they did was protected against their members being machine gunned for striking for better wages. But I think a lot of what they would do, I think they would turn into more like private licensing boards. You know, we've talked about, I mean, you're a rare bird in that you are a practicing attorney for decades who doesn't believe that lawyers should have to be licensed, right?
Well, yeah, but I, you know, I could save a few bucks if I didn't have to pay those dues every week. So, I mean, what's so odd about
and,
that?
You know, and people who don't believe that say, but you'd have all these people sending people to prison by misrepresenting them. And it's like, you know, I think that you would have things like a lawyer's union would be more like a guild where you could come in and take a test and, you know, like a private bar, and there would be several of these, and there'd be the budget one and there'd be the high level
one.
What
would you get? What would you get if you passed the test?
You'd get to put a little sticker in your window and in your ads, you know, a little symbol.
That said that you passed the test.
Kind of like under, you know, UL listed electronics, like, you know, you go to buy a power drill. You want to get the one that has the UL sticker or the other sticker. That's kind of like UL.
You bet. And, but you could still be a lawyer even if you didn't have the certification, though, right?
You can still, yeah, and you can still buy a really cheap drill that's going to electrocute you that does not have the UL sticker. But Underwriters Laboratories, I always accidentally call them Underwater Laboratories. Underwriters Laboratories, people pay to have their stuff checked out, to have their machinery checked out. And no matter how much you pay, you can't pay them to pass. You can't bribe them. Basically, you pay them to test it, and if it passes their rigorous safety standards, they will let you put the UL listing on it.
And yeah, UL has no authority. They're only selling one thing, and it's a reputation.
Yeah, and I think things like that would run the world in the absence of government. I think that the FDA would be replaced by that. I think that bar associations would be replaced by that. I think physicians, you know, licensure would be replaced by that.
Would be replaced by that.
Yeah, and I don't think it would just be organizations like UL. I think it would be websites and magazines like Yelp.com is how people find a carpenter that's not going to rip them off and destroy their house now. And sure. Angie's List and Consumer Reports magazine. And, you know, those things have a lot higher rating of picking winners and losers than governments. I mean, think about it. This comes up every time this discussion comes up. But for anybody who's new to this show or these concepts and hasn't heard it, you know, people say, without the FDA, we'd all be drinking poison. But you know what? Think about how many drugs the FDA has recalled because they kill people that the FDA first approved. I mean, I am living proof of this, and fortunately, it's not something that's life-threatening, but my mother took tetracycline for an infection when she was pregnant with me, and tetracycline was a new drug, and it was FDA-approved. It discolors kids' teeth in the womb. My teeth are discolored because my mother took an FDA-approved drug that is no longer approved for pregnant women, but it was back then. So when you see me smile, when you see me, yeah, right. When you see me smile at Porkfest, that's why.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
Don't be afraid of the dark, because we're here to talk about the light within your soul and give you some salvation of lib hair and what it might look like here on the show, Michael Dean After Dark. So, Randy England, you had a critique of my saying that unions would look more like guilds of yore in lib hair, and you correctly pointed out that guilds were not a libertarian paradise. What was wrong with guilds?
Well, yeah, not really, but, you know, the guilds did a couple of things. You know, they controlled who could belong to the Horseshoers Guild or whatever the guild was, and also they controlled how much you could charge.
It's so square.
And they were enforced by the state. So it was the ultimate crony capitalism type thing, even though they were small businesses. You know, you had the state sitting on everybody. You know, we started talking about this because
was it the state or was it its own state?
Well, you have to have the guild would either have to have permission to use violence against people who wanted to practice that trade without their permission, or they would have to enlist the sheriff or whoever the person was. I mean, somebody, when you're saying you cannot do this unless you obey all of our rules and we let you in, and you can't do this unless you charge X dollars or whatever for this product or this service, and you don't do it, the only other thing you can do is have somebody come in and hurt that person.
You know,
and it has to be legal.
Those kind of rules, actually, in a way, I've never really thought about this, but they kind of remind me of intellectual property law, which we're going to get into a little bit here, but it's kind of intellectual property protections on the practicing, you know, like instead of a patent on a process or a machine, it's broader than that. It's like a patent on using those machines or using the whole field of processes that are involved in one particular manufacturing or service.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think, you know, I think you did say that you didn't think unions were going to be much of a role or were going to make it. And I don't think they are either, because everything that is enforced by the government today would be gone. I mean, there's nothing voluntary about unions the way that they're set up now. I mean, the government forces this to happen. The government, they not only sit on the employers and they have a lot of things binding them, but the unions are also, they're handcuffed by lots of rules, like you can't go on strike against a related industry, you can't go on strike against other customer. Yeah, well, yeah, that there's lots of rules that handcuff them. You know, back in the old days, before the 30s, when you had the National Labor Relations Act and they started the legislations, you had these, you probably heard of the Wobblies, right? The IWW.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of commies. Not exactly, but kind of.
I'm laughing because, like, they're spiritual grandchildren. There still is an International Workers of the World you know, communist movement. And I, in LA, I used to go to this coffee shop where they would come in once a week and all, you know, 12 of them would take over a table, and they would all plan their newsletter for that month. And I'll tell you this, those were the loudest, most obnoxious people I've ever encountered in a coffee shop. And my buddy who worked there, who was pretty much a socialist, told me that they never tipped. So, like, the guys who were yelling, workers of the world, were not supporting the workers of the world. And I actually asked them about it one time, and they said, we don't believe in tipping, because as long as you're tipping, wages will not improve.
Oh, so you keep the man down, and that'll make progress.
Yes.
Well, I the Wobblies, I mean, they're worse now. You know, I respected things that they used to do, because in the old days, they didn't want to have anything to do with the government. They wanted to do their own direct actions. We're going to do sit-down strikes. We're going to do slowdowns. We'll boycott anybody we want. We'll strike anybody we want. And it's none of your business.
Well,
and
communists,
I mean, had to respect that.
The original idea of communism was a stateless society where basically the unions would become the state, but they were anarchists. And that got turned into the complete opposite with the Soviet Union and most, if not all, communist countries. I mean, they just turned into tyrannical, you know, instead of the workers sharing everything, it was like the people running the government living high off the hog, and the workers all waiting in line for 4 hours for a loaf of bread.
Yeah, I don't think the unions are really going to survive it very well. I think the most that they can do is maybe cause some temporary market failures, as they use it, you know, until it takes a little bit of time for somebody to react and undercut them, and then they've hurt themselves, you know, by taking their own jobs.
Yeah, they all just send them overseas. I mean, really, I think what you'd see in LibPair is a lot more globalization in the good sense and not the bad sense. I mean, really, in the economy we have, the like instant connectivity, the drive toward the intellectual, toward the software world instead of the hardware world, the outsourcing of the hardware part of it, of putting the screws into the boxes, and emerging technologies like 3D printers, I really think there would just be like no need for a union. It's like Craigslist would replace unions, you know, like, oh, you need a job done? Find people in your neighborhood or on the other side of the world that can do it for the price you want to pay. I think there would be a lot less jobs and a lot more work. I think there'd be a lot less you do the same thing your whole life in the same cubicle or, you know, space in a factory, and you get a gold watch and a little bit of pension when you die. And I think it'd be more like everybody would be more diverse in what they can do, to the point where, you know, you would work a year at one job and 4 months at another job and 3 months at another job. And the people who'd be the most valued and paid the most would be the people who could expand and meet deadlines and change what they're doing and solve problems. And the people who couldn't do that would be, you know, replaced by robots or sweeping floors. And I don't think that's a bad thing, man, because I really think a big problem with society that is changing really rapidly, even though the government and unions are trying to prevent it, is that education is still basically what it was 150 years ago, even though now they have big flat screen Apple monitors instead of chalkboards. It's still one person teaching 20 people at the same rate, regardless of their ability. Everyone sits in little rows. Everybody shows up at the same time, at the same place for years in a row, and does rote memorization, doesn't learn any problem solving. And basically, they're training you to work in a factory or be a soldier. And that's dead, man. I mean, the people that are making a lot of money now are people with a laptop that can work from anywhere in the world to anywhere in the world. I think you'd have a lot more employment agencies, temporary employment agencies for really brilliant people too. And because if you're that kind of person that can do the high end job from anywhere where you have to basically like build a company for somebody in a week and put it together and it's never the same job, and it involves a lot of diverse skills, I think that those people don't want to sit around looking for work. I think they would pay 10 or 20% to somebody who would find them that work and keep them stacked up with jobs all the time.
They just do the contract work and
yeah,
and they can find you easy because of the internet. Yeah,
I don't and they can pay you instantly with Bitcoin, man.
yep, they could. Now unions, I mean, they may have a place. I'm thinking that if they became sort of cooperative with the businesses, they could find a place for themselves. Like, you know, some places have what they call the a union shop, but they actually turn the union into the recruiter and the trainer, and actually assume some valuable functions. Those things done cooperative could end up making some symbiotic relationships make them useful.
I just really hate the word union. It's such a dirty word, and I think whatever we're talking about that would exist in the economy of the not too distant future, where the government is removed and technology is even further and people's education is even more diversified and at their own rate, you know, with things like Khan Academy, you can get a high school education better than you can in high school in a few years on YouTube for free. And it's set up.
College education,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah. Well, you can pay a little bit and get a college education too, through an actual accredited college too, and then go to take your exams at the college. But I just think that the word union doesn't exist for it anymore. Kind of in the same way of like, what do you call Bitcoin? You know, is it currency? Is it money? Is it units of transfer? Is it units of accounting? It's kind of all those things, and in some ways, none of those things. I kind of think it's a failing for people to try to attach old set in stone terms like union to new things that would exist without it, without the
we'll
government.
We'll see. Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, anyway,
do you have
say about the unions?
Do you have employees?
I have no employees.
You don't have a paralegal or a secretary or an assistant?
Criminal defense attorneys don't need that.
I've not heard that before.
I don't write many briefs, and if I do, I have a computer and everything is canned anyway. I have to do my own research. Yeah. No, I handle everything myself, and boy, I tell you, low overhead. A lot of worries that you don't have, and a lot of complications that do not exist when you can just even your taxes are so much easier.
Press a button. Yeah, I guess what
not
it is.
That I
you
like
know,
it.
You know what it is? It's that in my state, there's such a low population that there aren't a lot of attorneys that only do one thing.
Well, that's what I'm the only person in my town that does one thing like that. I mean, there's some that do some other things. I know there's some that just do bankruptcy and some that just do disability, but I think I'm the only purely criminal defense attorney in my town.
Yeah, I mean, what's the population of Jefferson City?
Oh, it's probably close to 50,000, a little less.
And what's the next biggest town, Oklahoma City?
No, Columbia, Missouri.
How big is that?
University of Missouri is there. Oh, it's probably closer to 100.
100,000.
We're kind of halfway between Kansas City and St. Louis, you know, which are the big cities.
Yeah, my whole state has a 500,000 people. So attorneys here, I mean, there are some that only do oil. That's a big thing here, that there's attorneys that only do that. But I don't think there are many or any attorneys here that, for instance, just do divorce or just do criminal. You know, if they're not just doing oil or water rights, which is an interesting thing too, then they're doing everything. You know, they're doing a little criminal attorney, little divorce, little family law, little, you know, copyright, patent, and trademark, probably everything.
Yeah, I just wanted to do something that I could do without having to crack a book.
I don't think there's any entertainment attorneys in Wyoming at all, though. We'll be back on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep.
The more people seeding the fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hold your kitties tight. It's Michael Dean After Dark. This is the last bit of our show. We're going to talk about intellectual property law in 60 seconds or less, and then we'll have a rebuttal from counselor over on the other end. Here's what I think about intellectual property law. I think that patents and copyrights are ridiculous and should all be dissolved immediately. I don't believe you can ethically use force to keep somebody from copying an idea. I also think that now with things like Namecoin and the blockchain and the ID namespace, you can prove first authorship of something. So if you have an ego like me and don't care about being copied and consider it flattery and consider it part of standing on the shoulders of giants and progress that has led to keep us from living in ditches and pushing berries up our nose and dying of influenza at 15, you can take credit for that and you can prove you came up with something. I also believe that that sort of system could be used to replace trademark. Now, I do believe there's a value to trademark or to a trademark, to the idea of I only like watches made by that guy or that group. I want one of those, and being able to tell that it's not a counterfeit. And that could also be done with the blockchain. You could generate absolutely cryptographically uncopyable holograms and put them on the watch, etch them in the back. And the potential purchaser could scan it with his smartphone and instantly prove, yes, that came from that company. And if it's stolen, he could send out, sort of a bounty hunter to get back stolen goods, which police almost never actually do. They never get your stuff back. The only reason you call the police when you get broken into is so you can file your insurance claim. So that can all be done with technology now. Any of the trademark stuff and the proof of stuff and maybe even finding where stuff is. And the copyright and patent stuff is ridiculous. It's aggression. It's BS. It shouldn't exist anymore. Not just from a moral standpoint, but because the cow is out of the barn. With digital copying of things, you can't stop it, man. You cannot stop it. And even if you can stop the manufacturer of copying of stuff, they're going to do it in China anyway. And America won't do anything about it. Your sheriff's not going to go over there. Your federal government's not going to go over there. They say they do. They put those threatening statements at the beginning of the DVD. Every time you watch a DVD, every time you sit down with your loved ones to enjoy a movie, you get threatened with being thrown in prison and having men do horrible things to you because you think about making a copy of a movie for a friend. So that's my statement. That's my opening. That's my closing arguments, counselor. What do you got?
Well, what am I supposed to disagree with there?
You brought it up.
I agree with everything that you said. The one thing, though, the morality of it, the thing about the barn door being closed. One of the big problems that we have with IP is that it's so easy to copy things, especially digital things and that sort of thing, that the whole thing becomes ridiculous. You have to have punishments for violation of the IP law. That it's just grossly unjust. I mean, if you steal a 99-cent, song or something, I mean, is a $10,000 fine proportional
it is
to
in their
a $1
mind.
Theft?
It is in their mind because it approaches the number of people they will never be able to catch. You're paying 99 cents each in that fine for the 10,000 people they don't even know exist who did it. It's even a bigger ratio than that.
You don't buy in for that kind of punishment logic.
No, you can't morally punish one person for a group of people they've never met.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just so crazy. I mean, you can get download stuff so easy on the internet. I mean, when Napster came out, I mean, it just changed everything. You know, it was kind of like if you have private property and you set a drinking fountain out in your front yard by the curb on a hot day.
And filled it with whiskey.
Filled it with ice water and then shoot everybody, you know, that steps up to take a drink.
That's a good analogy.
It's just too easy. And what you need to do is say, you know, this isn't going to work stopping people from using that fountain. We're going to find another way. I really think if IP just disappeared tomorrow, the whole thing would sort itself out in a just good way.
Yeah, but it would involve a lot of attorneys having to find honest work.
Fine with me.
IP attorneys having to find honest work. All right, thanks, Randy. It's been a pleasure having you.
Michael,
and come back 6 days from now, next Sunday night.
I'll be back.
Worms.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.